I would like to welcome you all to the Economic Policy Institute call to discuss the release of new data from the Census Bureau on income, poverty, and health insurance coverage for 2009. My name is John Irons. I'm the research director here at EPI, and I'm going to moderate today's call. Let me introduce our speakers first and then tell you a little bit about the plan for the day. We have Larry Katz, who is the Elizabeth Allison Professor of Economics at Harvard University. He used to serve as a chief economist at the U.S. Department of Labor from 93 to 94. We also have Elise Gould, who is the Director of Health Policy Research, and she is an economist here at the Economic Policy Institute. And we also have Heidi Shearholz, who is also an economist here at EPI. So the plan for the day is to have Heidi initially give us some context, specifically on the labor market conditions and how they impact the numbers that were released today. Elise will then discuss poverty. We will then have Larry discuss income for a couple minutes, and then Elise will come back and talk about health insurance, given that that's her particular specialty. And then we'll open the floor for questions. So each person will have just a couple minutes to give some first thoughts, and then we'll do some Q&A. So let me just turn it over to Heidi.
All right. Thanks, John. And good morning, everyone. Or is it afternoon by now? So this morning's release by the Census Bureau of the 2009 poverty and income data, I think the best way to look at it is it's yet another reminder of the severity of the Great Recession that began in December 2007. My co-presenters, as John mentioned, will give you the more of the details of the numbers released today, but let me give you a little bit of the macro context. So most simply, the labor market is the core building block of family incomes. So when unemployment skyrockets and job seekers can't find work, incomes fall and poverty rises. So the big jumps in poverty and declines in income that we saw in the data today are actually no surprise given the deterioration in the labor market that we saw over this period. The unemployment rate increased from 5.8% in 2008 to 9.3% in 2009. That was the biggest increase in the unemployment rate on record since World War II. When we look back on this whole period, we will likely find that the Great Recession caused the unemployment rate to rise for 4 years, from 2007 to 2011. But this data release, the increase from 2008 to 2009, which today's data captures, really covers the big collapse. This captures the depth of the recession. And let me also quickly touch on how the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009 affected today's numbers. So first of all, it's important to note that ERA passed in February of 2009. It began being implemented in the spring and summer of that year and was in the process of ramping up through the end of the year. So the full impact of ERA was not actually felt until this year. But even though the full effects of the Recovery Act are not reflected in the numbers today, you can still see its positive impact. The primary impact of ERA is through the earnings workers receive from the jobs created and saved by the stimulus. So the CBO estimates that by the end of 2009, the Recovery Act had created or saved between 1.3 and 2.7 million full-time equivalent jobs. So without those jobs, the income declines and poverty increases in 2009 that Larry and Elise will discuss further would have been more dramatic. But then there's the question of what can we say about the direct income supports in ERA? So the three major income supports in the stimulus are unemployment insurance, nutritional assistance or food stamps, and tax cuts. Of those three, only unemployment insurance is actually reflected in the income data. These income numbers include cash income from programs like unemployment insurance. They do not include non-cash benefits like food stamps, and they calculate income pre-tax, so any tax changes are not reflected. What can we say about unemployment insurance then? Unfortunately, the aggregated data released today don't let us say very much, but we know that $28 billion was spent in 2009 on extended unemployment insurance benefits as a part of the Recovery Act. While the unemployment insurance benefits replace a maximum of half of a worker's prior earnings, Those benefits nevertheless go exclusively to workers who have been laid off and, because of the weakness of the labor market in 2009, had a very low chance of quickly finding another job. So these unemployment benefits went to families who otherwise would likely have seen even steeper income declines, in some cases dropping below the poverty line. So I think the broad brushstroke there is what we can say about ERA is that while today's report is ugly, without ERA it would have been a lot uglier. And let me say one final quick thing about inflation. So real earnings in 2008 took a hit because inflation was very high due to a huge increase in energy prices in 2008. That flipped around. In 2009, energy prices plummeted and inflation was actually negative. So real earnings got a big boost. And one thing that we have never seen before, which we saw this time, is that the poverty threshold actually decreased because it is adjusted only for inflation. So when inflation drops, the poverty threshold drops as well. So that's just one thing in the background here, that one of the reasons that real earnings declines weren't bigger than they were is that real earnings got a big boost from the fact that there really was no, there's actual negative inflation over this period. And with that, let me turn it over to my colleague, Elise Gould, who will talk about poverty.
Thanks, Heidi. This is Elise. just to take off where Heidi left off there, the poverty threshold, she did say correctly, did decrease. For Family 4, let me just give you that number. In 2009, it's 21,954. So that's for a family of four. It's adjusted for different family sizes. But basically, we're talking about people who are living, when we talk about the poverty rate, people who are living below that threshold. In the 5 decades that this measure has existed, 2009 is the first time that the threshold has ever decreased. So it's an important point to mention. So let's look at the data now. I'm going to specifically talk about changes between 2008 and 2009. The poverty rate increased between those 2 years from 13.2% in 2008 to 14.3% in 2009, representing an additional 3.7 million people living in poverty for a total number of people in poverty in 2009 of 43.6 million. The poverty rate for children was 20.7% in 2009, notably much higher than the overall rate, representing 15.5 million children living in poverty. In 2009, over one-third, about 35% of all people living in poverty, were children. The poverty rate for working-age people, here I'm defining working-age people as 18 to 64 years old, hit 12.9% in 2009. This is the highest rate in nearly 50 years. The elderly, those 65 and older, saw a decline in poverty, actually, from 2008 to 2009 of 0.8 percentage point, decreased to 8.9% in 2009. This is the lowest elderly poverty rate on record. Social Security provides seniors with an income that insulates them against severe economic downturns like the Great Recession. So that is not a surprise that we might see their rates not moving at all. The fact that they have gone down is due to a boost in Social Security payments that were part of the Recovery Act of 2009. While no single group, if we look at group people grouped by racial and ethnic categories, no single group was spared these losses. White non-Hispanics maintained far lower rates in 2009. Hispanics and Asians were particularly hard hit by increases in poverty over the entire recession from 2007 to 2009, increasing for Hispanics 3.8 percentage points and 2.3 percentage points for Asians. I want to point out, we talk about the poverty line as we're talking about people below the poverty line at that 21,954 threshold. If we look at people below half the poverty line, so those people for a family of four living below about $11,000, the share of the population below that line hit a record high. So those are people living in deep poverty. Right now, in 2009, 6.3% of the population fell below that the poverty line, so that that line around 11,000 for a family of four, the record high. In 2009, over one-third of black children and nearly one-third of Hispanic children were living in poverty. Families with children headed by single mothers hit 38.5% in 2009. Of the 6.6 million families living in poverty, those are families with children, 3.8 million of them were headed by a single mom. While the largest increase in the unemployment rate in this recession was experienced, as Heidi mentioned, between 2008 and 2009, it is still expected to rise in 2010 and 2011. Therefore, unfortunately, we still haven't seen the full extent of the recession's impact on poverty.
Okay, this is Larry Katz from Harvard. The new data released by the Census Bureau provide us with our most detailed look to date of the human cost and the severity of this Great Recession, and it's not a pretty picture at all for the typical American household. If you look at the household income data and you look at the 2 years of the recession, so from 2007 to 2009, we see a decline in 4.2% in the median income of an American household, real median income. There was a larger decline. The one surprise in the report of the last couple of years, there was a larger decline in 2008 than in 2009. It was only down 0.7%. But if you put the 2 years together, the pattern is exactly what you would expect from this severe recession, where GDP per capita also fell by about 4%. And when you look a bit longer, this comes on top of a very tepid recovery from 2002 to 7, in which we never got back up to the income level we'd been seeing in the late 1990s. And while there's been lots of recent talk as the weak labor market in 2010 of going forward, maybe we'll have a lost decade like Japan, the reality is we've already had that lost decade for the typical American family. As we close the books on the decade, you know, through 2009, in fact, median real family income has fallen by 5% since the start of the decade, from 1999, the previous peak. In the boom of the late 90s to 2009, there was a decline of 0.8% in the so-called expansion of the 2000 period, and the Great Recession has added to it. So for the typical American family, for the first time, certainly since the Great Depression, a decade has gone by in which real incomes have fallen, and fallen by 5%. On top of that, the sort of decline in real income is pretty widespread. All broad education groups over the last 2 years have seen declines in income. It's substantially affected by the labor market and by declining earnings per worker, much of that coming about from the tremendous increase in unemployment Heidi mentioned, and a huge decline even among those staying in work and getting reasonable hours and getting full year work. There was a drop of, you know, almost 9 million full-time, full-year workers decline in the 2 years of the recession. For men, real mean earnings, that is adding up the total earnings men had relative to the total number of adult men, actually have fallen by 6 percentage points, 6% in this recession, which is a very large decline, and women's mean earnings have gone nowhere. When we put it together, the typical American worker, even those who remained employed, have seen declining real earnings, both men and women, in this downturn. Among those who remain full-time, full-year, the picture is a bit better. They have shown an increase, but some of that is a statistical illusion. As you reduce the number of people who work full-time, full-year, and they're disproportionately people who had lower-wage jobs and having trouble, you'll make the average look like it's going up, even though nobody is doing better, and that's part of the story. So don't be misled by the full-time, full-year earnings number going up a little bit. For the actual typical worker, there has not been much improvement, even with the low inflation. So the bottom line is we have had a very severe recession on top of a very weak and tepid recovery, and it's meant essentially a decade of decline for the typical American household. Only families headed by, you know, essentially people with professional degrees and PhDs, if you look at the data, have sort of withstood the recession without large losses in earnings. And as what Elise said, there's a substantial increase in poverty, particularly for children and for working-age families.
Great, thanks. I think we'll turn back to Elise now to discuss some of the health insurance numbers.
As has already been mentioned, while the country was already in a recession in 2008, the economy sharply deteriorated in 2009, the unemployment rate increasing from 5.8 to 9.3% between 2008 and 2009. As was stated, the largest one-year increase on record. It's important to point that out, again, when we look at health insurance, as most Americans, particularly those under 65 years old, rely on health insurance through the workplace. So it's no surprise that employer-sponsored health insurance fell sharply from 2008 to 2009. Employment-based coverage for the under 65 continued to erode for the ninth year in a row from 2000 to 2009, falling 3 percentage points just in that 1 year from 2008 to 2009, from 61.9% to 58.9%, its current rate in 2009. That's three times faster than the decline from 2007 to 2008. Because Americans over 65 years old have near universal access to health insurance coverage through Medicare, my comments right now focus exclusively on coverage rates for the under 65 population. So to the extent that any of the overall rates differ, that's only because of the inclusion of the elderly in the Census Bureau's report. I think it's most important to focus on the under 65 population. So in 2009, 50 million people under 65 were uninsured, up 4.3 million since 2008. The number of uninsured non-elderly Americans is 11.8 million higher than it was. In 2000. Employer-sponsored health insurance remains the predominant form of coverage for those under 65 years old. The share of non-elderly Americans with employer-sponsored health insurance declined, as I said already, for the ninth year in a row, down from 61.9% in 2008 to 58.9% in 2009, a total decline of 9.4 percentage points since 2000, but declined nearly 10 percentage points over the decade. The only reason why the drop in employer-sponsored insurance did not translate into an even larger increase in the share uninsured is because 4.9 million more people under 65 were covered by Medicaid and SCHIP, State Children's Health Insurance Program, in 2009. Unfortunately, the number without ESI, employer-sponsored insurance, and thus without any insurance, is likely to swell in 2010 and 2011 as the unemployment rate is expected to continue to rise. Critical provisions in the Recovery Act mitigated the damage by subsidizing COBRA, allowing people to buy insurance after they lose their job at a subsidized rate, and helping to shore up Medicaid funding at the state level.
Okay, great. Thanks. I think we're going to open it up for Q&A, and I guess, Ryan, I guess you're going to be the traffic cop on this.
Yes, sir. At this time, we will open up the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touchtone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, please press star 2. And once again, to ask a question, that is the star key followed by the one key. Our first question comes from Doug Trapp with American Medical News.
Hi, just a quick one here. When it comes to the uninsured rate and the declining rates of employer-sponsored coverage, do you guys have any sense or anything you can say about how that affects patients' healthcare decisions?
Lisa?
Yes. So people who put off care, are you referring to the fact that people are likely to put off care if they don't have...
Yeah, just anything. If you think that's the case, or if government coverage maybe is equivalent to what they used to have, or even just a big picture type question.
I think that the declines in health insurance for sure add to people's health insecurity if they don't have coverage, and particularly if they don't have income to be able to self-insure or go to the doctor when they need to, they're going to put off coverage. And I think that given what we've seen in terms of high and rising health care costs, it just adds further to their economic insecurity.
And anything else about, do you get the sense, is there actually evidence out there that shows that people are declining to go to the doctor's offices or that sort of thing?
I haven't seen that, but we can follow up later if you'd like following the call, and I can talk to you about that further.
Okay, appreciate it.
Sure.
Thank you for your question. And just as a further reminder, to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touch-tone phone. And at this time, we are currently holding for questions.
All right, I guess this might be last call for questions. Give people 10 seconds more, and then we'll wrap it up.
Okay, we do have another question from Don Lee with the LA Times.
Hi, thanks for doing this call. I mean, given that this 2009 was a much steeper hit to the job market, and I guess even with the inflation differences, I'm surprised that incomes did not fall much more. I mean, how much would the transfer payments have made up for that?
This is Larry Katz. I think that, you know, what we actually see is I think the transfer payments were important in unemployment insurance. And, you know, if you actually look at the GDP numbers, disposable, you know, sort of personal income, adding in transfers and stuff and netting out, you know, things, which isn't a perfect proxy, but it gets close to what the census tries to measure, actually rose in 2009 a little bit versus 2008 versus falling. So there is other evidence out there that suggests that's consistent. But I think there's a little bit of, you know, there's just always some mismeasurement. 2008 had a bigger fall in the income than you would have expected. 2009, a smaller fall. When you put the two together, 2007 to 2009, you're sort of right on with the decline in GDP per capita. So there really, you know, is a pretty consistent story that our national income accounts and the household data are both showing sort of 4% declines for the typical household in their income. And it was the pattern, you know, fits with the transfer programs and affecting disposable income. So I do think the expansions through the Recovery Act did certainly help in the 2009 numbers.
Let me just add one thing to that, just to reiterate. This is John Irons, again, the research director here at UPI. Something that Heidi said earlier, that the tax cut components of the Recovery Act will not really be reflected in this data. So that some of the decline that you will have seen in the income numbers, some of that gap will have been filled up by some of the tax policy changes that were part of the stimulus package back in 2009.
Right. So there's a, you know, a definite, you know, difference here is we don't, you know, eventually the census puts together multiple poverty and income measures that try to incorporate adjustments for taxes and for in-kind benefits like food stamps, which expanded. Those would lead to an improved picture because they did expand a lot in 2009. Those are not fully reflected. The disposable income numbers, which don't give you distribution, which show improvements in 2009, do include those factors, which were important.
Well, hello, am I still on the line here?
Yep.
You know, the Census Bureau noted that people doubling up had increased quite a bit, and given the way that the poverty and income data are measured by, in terms of households, how much do you think that affected the overall numbers? Hello?
Yep. Yeah, we're about
to grow. We're all looking around. There's no question that that could have an effect. The size of the effect, I'm really not sure of.
You know, I mean, it's a complicated factor. So you have to ask what's the counterfactual for the person or group that didn't double up as they get combined with another. If they would have been living on their own and been very low income and then they move into another family, you know, it's a dicey issue. If they all were sort of under stress, it could understate poverty. If you're not doing so well, relative moves in with you and you're a middle-class family, it won't show up in poverty, even that person is really poor. If they show up and you were on the edge of being in poverty and they aren't contributing income, they could knock you into being covered by poverty. So it's ambiguous what it does in the measured poverty numbers.
Okay. And I don't suppose there's any way of inferring from any of the data today just what percent or how large the people who fell below the poverty line, whether they were concentrated close to the poverty line or in the middle or far below? Is there any way of having...
There is, and they have breakdowns by being 50% or below, 75%.
Okay.
So there is data in there. I don't have the table sitting in front of me. Someone else might have it.
Right. I mean, what I mentioned earlier, I don't know if this is working off of that point, is that the share of the population that's below half the poverty line. So that has grown. So that has actually hit a record high since the data have been collected. That's a record high of 6.3%, the share of the population living below half the poverty line, or 50% of poverty.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Sure.
Thanks for your question.
Thank you. And at this time, there are no more questions.
Okay. Well, unless someone jumps in last minute, let me thank everyone for participating in the call. I think we're all looking forward to going through the data in much more detail, and we will be releasing a preliminary report on this before too long, so keep checking your email inboxes. So, again, thank you for participating.